Over to you, Sammy.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Rosie. I'm feeling super emotional because my daughter's just been through her prom, and everything you're sharing with us is exactly what she shared too on social media. Her pictures are beautiful. The reality was very different, and the crash afterwards was extreme. But 2 years late, she did make her prom, and we're very grateful for that. So my job today is to really share our vision for what we're calling the gold standard long COVID service for children. And it starts right from the basics. It starts with infection control, because let's remember why our children are sick and how it feels for us as family members and for our children to come into an environment in an indoor space where people aren't taking the cause of their disease seriously. So it's to acknowledge and address the risk of reinfection and widespread transmission, implement suitable and effective air filtration and ventilation measures to ensure a safe environment, and support mandatory mask wearing to prevent further transmission. It's so often happens in the support group that we hear from families who tell us that they have been told that you don't need to wear a mask anymore. Did you realise? It's not okay. It's not okay. Next slide, please. We're asking that all services are paediatric consultant led, and that the clinic is staffed by paediatricians with an understanding, awareness, and experience in treating post-viral illness and conditions associated with long COVID, including ME/CFS, POTS, dysautonomia, MCAS, and PANS. Obviously, this list is not exhaustive. It's really important that families have a good, positive first experience, and seeing the right person with the right level of expertise is going to make sure that happens. It's going to improve engagement and indeed outcomes. Next slide, please. We'd like to see an interdisciplinary team approach, so fostering collaborations among clinical specialisms, including cardiology, neurology, psychology, endocrinology, gastroenterology, immunology, rheumatology, dietetics, occupational therapy, physiotherapy, speech and language therapy. And I'd like to draw your attention to a paper that came out yesterday, Long COVID Integrated Approaches to the Chronic Disease Management. There's a link on the slide, and I'm sure it's very easy to find as well, from Dr. Mark Fahey and team at Derby University. This is so important, the interdisciplinary team approach, because the level of energy required to come to an appointment needs to be of a value to the people coming, more than the impact of the person attending the appointment. And by that I mean the very challenge of leaving the house with a child who may be too big to carry, who may not have access to the mobility aids that they need to be able to get to the clinic. It is huge. And so it's so important that when children and their families come through that door, that they're seeing people who are going to be able to add value, give them value for attending the appointment, that will outweigh the negative impact of perhaps travelling to that appointment. And I can't really be clear about that enough, because even simple things like if you're a single parent family or one of your parents is working and the child can't walk well, doesn't have the either mobility or the energy to get across the car park, how do you park your car, safely leave your child, get something to get, wheelchair from the hospital to bring the child into the clinic. These are all things that really have to be thought out, because they are barriers for our families to access care. So much so that we often hear families say that the service isn't valuable enough for them. They'd rather not go to the appointments. And then that often gets recorded as discharged and recovered. And in fact, those children are not receiving any care. Next slide, please. Patient safety, something that I'm sure everybody recognises the importance of, but I just want to draw your attention to what we mean by that, and that's prioritising the multi-system screening before commencing rehabilitation, and in particular, screening for post-exertional symptom exacerbation, And following the NICE guidelines for ME/CFS until long COVID, GLIDE guidelines are updated to what we think they need to be for the majority of the children that we see through our services. We'd also like to see screening for POTS or orthostatic intolerance. Almost all children that we come across in our services have either symptoms consistent with or a diagnosis of these conditions. What we do see very clearly is that the children who are able to access treatment, medicine from private services benefit. And I've not seen one single report of a child receiving medication, Evabradine and other medications for managing POTS that hasn't helped them. And so I think we really need to be aware of that. And in many cases, we see children who don't have these symptoms initially develop them later on. So I think it probably needs to be something that's periodically reviewed. So obtain consent for data collection and commit to recruiting patients to clinical trials. So I've added this in patient safety because we really believe that the only way that we're going to collectively come to a brighter future is to start, you know, recording the data, sharing the data, and having pediatric clinical trials. And I think that, you know, the pediatric services are the ideal place for that to happen. So I'd encourage everybody to really consider that. I won't read through all of the screening suggestions there. You can see them clearly on the screen. But I think that it's really clear from the 3 years that we've been observing, you know, 7,000 families going through this this chronic and complex disease process, that what appears at the start isn't always the only issue. So a thorough screening process and working out who needs that, when they need it, when it's right to watch and wait, and when we need to intervene early on. Next slide, please. A holistic approach, and by this I mean a truly holistic approach. So providing empathy, support and validation to patients and their families is so important, particularly if we consider the challenges to get to a service in secondary care. It's so complex. You know, families will have been likely working on getting a referral for many weeks, months, and in some cases even years before they've managed to get referred into the service. So how they're treated from day one is really important. Begin treatment pathways for pathology before initiating rehabilitation. So please don't be asking families, as Rosie very eloquently described earlier, to start doing more exercise until you're absolutely sure that there's nothing else going on, until they've been screened for post-exertional symptom exacerbation, until they've had even a simple test like a Nasaline test, for example, to check for orthostatic intolerance. Communicate with schools, school nurses, hospital schools and community services to support and develop appropriate hybrid academic support plans for children during their recovery duration of illness. And that could be something as simple as having a template letter that clinicians can use to support and encourage schools to put in place flexible timetables, to look at later starts in the day, earlier finishes, maybe consider access taxis and transportation to how those children are going to continue getting access to some education and to some social interaction with their peers, to continue feeling part of their normal life, even if they can't do what they usually would. And to offer sleep and lifestyle advice for overall well-being. And we've put this clearly in holistic approach because we would really like services to be very clear that this is not a treatment for long COVID. It supports recovery. And families know this isn't a treatment for long COVID. So please don't tell them that it is. Please be honest and say that this is how they can support their general and overall well-being. Next slide, please. So recognise non-NHS healthcare. We've thought very carefully about the title of this slide because what we're trying to highlight here is that due to the lag in research for children, due to the lag in service development for children, families have had to go and seek private healthcare, where perhaps they would not have done so with other elements of their health. And for many families, unfortunately, this is, causing debt, it's causing stress. And they will have gone to long lengths to try and best support their children and take the right course of action that they feel that they have needed to take to support their child. So when they bring those results, that information, that research into an appointment, please take it seriously. Please consider contacting the organisation that supplied that information with consent of the family, if it's appropriate to do so, to find out where perhaps it can be utilised. Don't ignore it, don't dismiss it. And I wanted to draw your attention to this blog that a paediatrician from Rome has started, Danilo Bonsenso. He's done a lot of research in long COVID. He works a lot with our charity, and he runs a he chairs an international discussion group called IP4C. If you're not aware of it, I would urge you to consider joining it. It's a really good collaborative discussion group that meets monthly, and the meeting notes are shared widely, and he also shares it in his blog. Next slide, please. Treatment and monitoring. So individualized goal orientated treatment plans. It's very important that the goals are agreed with the patient, with the child, with the family, based on their ongoing symptoms and emerging issues. What do they need to do that's going to improve their functional living? Ensure continuous objective monitoring and evaluation of quality of life, because ultimately, at the moment, there might not be a cure for long COVID. Some symptoms can be treated, but what is the impact of these symptoms on the child, on the family, and is there a way that that the service can support them? We're suggesting 6 monthly or annual reviews for all those children not back to pre-morbid health and activity status. And I think this is really important. And as I mentioned earlier, some families choose to disengage with services because they don't feel the service is valuable to them, or that the attendance of the service is too impactful on their everyday life, so they stop engaging. That doesn't mean necessarily that their child is well, and I think we're really missing a trick here on how we can best support children and families if we don't continue to review after they if they're not improving at the point that they're either leaving the service or that you feel that you're unable to offer them any further support. Discharge survey for monitoring, research, and future planning. I think this is absolutely essential. I can't stress that enough. Families that leave the service might not be leaving the service because they want to leave the service. They might be leaving for a multitude of reasons, which I could spend all day talking about and won't. But it's really important to check in why they've left, and ideally make those surveys anonymous so that families feel that they can be honest about the reasons, so that we can all learn how to develop and better service and support these families and children appropriately. Next slide, please. Follow-up care, so providing detailed patient-specific guidance for GPs and primary care teams. As you're seeing more and more children, you're learning all the time. Please don't assume that the GPs are learning at the same rate. Training hasn't necessarily been made available to all GPs. They may not have accessed the training. It might not be of a decent standard. So we need to think about the training for primary care and GPs. But in the meantime, we need to be providing really clear information once the family is leaving the long COVID service, and deliver expert advice on monitoring, ongoing medication, and access to community support services. So that handover advice or ongoing advice might need to be quite detailed, particularly if that GP hasn't had a child with long COVID before. So I just need to think about that. and determine the decision for discharge based on sustained progress and the family's readiness rather than adhering to a rigid time frame. So whilst we understand budget restraints, I think it's really important to have transparent conversations with families about discharge. What we've seen a lot has a really catastrophic effect on mental health of the parents who are trying to do everything they can in their power for their child, is that some services have sent out discharge letters without any prior warning. And it's very upsetting for the family. It causes a lot of distress and unnecessary anger. And I think it's something that can be very easily avoided with simple communication. And consider a long COVID community service with open access pathway back to the long COVID service. So when children are discharged, think about a community a service that they can access for ongoing maintenance support and be very clear about how they can be referred back into the long COVID service so that they don't feel abandoned and that they know that should there be worsening of symptoms or a change, that they've got a very clear path back in and that they won't necessarily have to go through the barriers and hurdles that they've had to go through to get to the service in the first place. Next slide, please.
Sally, I'm just going to give you a 1 minute alert, if that's okay.
Okay, thank you. Continued professional development. It's very clear, isn't it, what that is? It's really about staying on top of what's coming out. Research and information comes out all of the time. I know that our valued professionals in the NHS service are overstretched, but please stay on top of the research, because families are bringing very sick children in. Often it's at great cost personally to them. It could take them weeks to recover from coming in. So please be on top of the information, because you can be fairly sure that the families will be. Next slide, please. Expectations and signposting. So just being transparent with what you can offer, the communication with clear communications, pre-assessment and self-management advice from the point of referrals, particularly if it's a long lead time before families are going to get seen. As I mentioned before, they've probably already been struggling to get to your service and will have been waiting a long time for this information. Signpost to Long COVID Kids for community connection, support and resources. Families describe us as a lifeline. Our volunteers are there 24/7 and hand-holding at times when the NHS cannot. So just finally, be transparent. Next slide, please. I think we're there. Just our conclusion. So gold standard clinic, service of excellence for rehabilitation, treatment and support. And really thinking about how we're going to weave research into our clinics to ensure that we're all moving forward together and creating a brighter future for children harmed by SARS. Thank you.